You are listening to a talk given at the Brisbane City Bible Forum. We hope you enjoy the presentation.
So the question's up there above you, and we've already got a couple of questions coming in, which is terrific. I'm just going to draw out a couple of things for the interview. Yeah, thanks, Tracy. I'll let you catch your breath. You talked about out of 100 auditions that you might have, 10 where people say yes to you, and I'd never really thought about that before, that means there's 90 no's because of your looks, your ethnicity, your smile, your lips, your ass, not mine, yours. Did you see that crush some of the models around you?
I was actually quite surprised that I thought every model, everyone else confident about who they are as a model. I'm the only one who's lack of confidence. But when I walk out from like audition and when the agency says that, oh, you don't get this job, some girls cried. Especially they're very young, 13, 14, 15, they're below 20. And they really wish, they can get as much as job as they can. Mm. And mostly they feel like the first few weeks probably just crushed them. Lots of people crying, they're homesick, and they really want to get this job, and they don't get it. And the sense of rejections, it really hurts the heart, the young hearts. And it happens to me, it happens to lots of models. I think after sometimes, you just have to look strong on the outside, even though what's happening in the inside, only for you to know.
Yeah, okay, so you really develop a front stage and a backstage.
Totally. It's so funny how we have to do that, because even though when we're tired, when we arrive, like we're so exhausted from this audition after audition, we discourage. When we arrive, when we're about to open the door to see the one who will interview us, we will be acting like we just woke up, we're so feeling fresh, and we will just like telling story, and as much as we want them to remember us so they can actually pick us as the model for their products. And then when we walk out from that room, tired again and just be the real us again. It's just full of lots of acting actually involved even in the audition times.
Yeah, wow. That must be quite difficult because I guess in the corporate world people perform all the time. But I guess that's a real disjunction. You can't afford to let your grumpiness come into an audition. You're just not going to get it, are you? Yeah, that must be really hard work. Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, even though sometimes you cannot help it because they're teenagers. They're just young who have to look professional. But sometimes as human, it's not easy to always pretending. There's a day that you just like feeling grumpy. And I also think that because they're hungry, they're grumpy. Maybe it's part of it. But some of them who wants to look professional will do their best to put up a mask and to pretending that their world is fine and they're totally professional in order to gain the job.
Yeah, so it really leads to this kind of external, this is what I'd like you to see me as versus kind of what's going on in the heart.
Yes.
Do you think the industry cares about the men and women involved, the modeling industry and the fashion industry?
That's a very good question. I find it extremely fascinating that oftentimes when I observe the way a designer or people in the industry treat younger model or new models, they treat them oftentimes as an object. You're a walking mannequin. This is what you wear. This is what you're going to look. We're going to put makeup and hair, and this is how you're supposed to act for this part of scene. And it's just she become or he become an object. But then when they become famous, all of a sudden, all the people in the industry adore them like they're a small idols. Like, oh my gosh, this famous ass model's coming. Oh my gosh, okay, let's prepare everything. And I'm like, wait. They're the same. They just have different acknowledgement in the public because one is very famous and one is just nobody, not famous yet. But the treatment is so different. It's heaven and earth kind of thing, One gets extremely special treatment and the other one's just like, just model.
Not even a person.
Not even a person.
A mannequin, did you say?
Like a mannequin. Like a walking mannequin.
Yeah. Wow. I guess we just get to see the famous people on the stage and just don't think about that kind of that kind of background. Yeah.
It is very interesting. Even in terms of salary, it can go like super, so much difference between the famous model and just a new model. And also, they sometimes when they give you an outfit or they ask you to do certain pose, they don't even ask you, are you comfortable with this outfit? You okay with this pose? They're just like, do this. Wear this. Okay. As if your voice doesn't matter.
As if you're not a person.
Exactly. Until, that's why people pursue fame, because fame brings value. It increasing your salary, it increasing people's respect and love for you. It's so funny how the more famous you are, the more you don't have you don't spend money. Because when you're famous, you get things for free. But when you don't have money, you end up spending so much.
It's
such a weird world.
So that's amazing. So you kind of, you're actually devalued if you're not famous, because you're not asked what you think. Are you comfortable with this kind of clothing or pose or whatever? Yeah. So not even asked as a person. Because you're famous, you get to set the agenda, determine it.
You have the power when you're famous. Power,
which is, I guess, why we want fame. It's why we want to be famous. Maybe not as models. Some of us have got no hope in that part. But in our career or in sport or in our community, it just feels like it gives you a kind of power, doesn't it? I call it a professional facade. So we've got a tweet came in here. Do you still model today? And do you miss it? They kind of want to know what's going on in your heart. Do you still model today, and do you miss it? If not, do you miss it?
Yes. I officially quit modeling when I was about to go to uni at the age of 26. A few years ago, I realized I'm in a new phase of life. I just want to be a student, and later on, I want to practice what I study. So I stopped modeling, and I remember designer or magazine keep asking me if I want to do cover, if I want to do fashion show. And I keep saying no, because I think that I love the happy ending. I quit modeling when I was on the top. I feel like I quit because of my decision, not because the market doesn't want me anymore. It's a great feeling to stop at the top. But then just...
More power. That sounds like a more power thing. Like you get to decide.
It just feels good, yeah. recently, a good friend of mine asked me, he just asked me, can you please be in the cover? Please. And I told him, like, okay, let's just do it for fun. So I have a magazine in my bag. I can show you later if you want to see. It's the very first cover in many years that I've done. But I keep telling people, like, no, that wasn't work. It was just for fun. But the magazine came out last July in Indonesia.
And did you enjoy seeing yourself on the magazine?
You know, honestly, it was so weird. Because when I bought the magazine in the magazine store, I was like, oh, sorry, do you have a Her World magazine, a July edition? Yep. And he looked at the magazine and he looked at me. He didn't realize it was me. And I was just thinking, like, oh my goodness, how photoshoot changed the way you look, that you don't even look like the way you look, in the magazine. And he doesn't even realize it was me, the one who bought the magazine, was in the cover. And it feels weird. When I do the photoshoot, I don't know how to post. I lost it. People think, like, oh, Tracy, when you're in Instagram, you post really well. That's Instagram. Real photoshoot was really hard. It's just my body and my face not coordinating. One do this and the other do that. And just like, I feel like I lost it. And my friends keep assuring, like, don't worry, it's a bit rusty, but you still got it. Yeah, I don't know if it's compliments or...
or not quite. You told me, I heard you sharing it, I think, some of your house, and you said something really fascinating. You said you were walking along with your mum, and you were saying to your mum, that's me on the billboard. And your mum's like, no, that's not you. And you're like, it is me. And you're like, no, that's not you. And then you pointed out that actually, mum, look, the scar that I've got.
Yeah.
And it was only when your mum saw your flaw on the billboard that she went, that is you.
Yeah.
That's amazing, kind of, I guess, a sense of disconnect between the image and the person.
Exactly. It was in Brazil. I don't know if you know this brand called Mango. It was a worldwide campaign. Big, huge window photo. And then, I tried to convince my mom a good, 3 minutes or 5 minutes. Like, mom, I promise it's me. Until she saw the flaw. And I realized that it is amazing how this industry portrays something that doesn't really look even close to the reality. Every model wish they can look the way they look in the magazine. Because in reality, they don't look like that. Not even close. There's so much retouch, so much lighting, so much amazing makeup. You know, even now, like anti-wrinkle campaign using a 16-year-old girl. No one has wrinkles when you're 16. And I realized, like, this is, well, you know, this is like, this is my industry before. We fake happiness. We fake, you know, good life. We fake everything in order for people to buy the idea and be the clients, even though us in the industry knows that that's not true. But we still fool by our own photos.
That's amazing.
Oftentimes, yeah.
Now, got a question here a bit more about modeling, and then we'll move on to a couple other things. But what are relationships like between models? Huh? Given that you guys are competitors for the same job, what's a happy household?
Wow. Okay. I live in a model's apartment for the longest time because I was underage when I started in the agency. When you're below 16 by the U.S. law, you have to live with chaperone, and you have a curfew as well. You cannot leave before 6 o'clock in the morning, and you cannot come home after 10 o'clock in the evening. And you have to be in bed, and you have to do your homework. Like it's like a boarding school, but you have to work, not study during the day. So it's very interesting that at first I was like, oh my goodness, this is like so much friends. I'm so happy. I'm so excited meeting lots of people. I didn't realize that it can be, I mean, girls can be so mean. Sometimes they ask me like, can you wash the dishes? And I was like, I keep washing the dishes and they pile up all this thing. And it sounds really mean, but I was want to do the favor. I want them to like me. That's why I was doing it. And there's a point in my life I was thinking like, is it because I'm Asians? Is it because all the males is Asian normally, you know? And I feel like, oh, no, I don't want to do it anymore. So I told them, like, no, it's your turn. And I don't speak fluent English back then. I speak with such a broken English. So it's really hard for me to explain to people. But one of the worst things that model did to me is that I got my very first magazine photo shoot. It was 10 pages of spread in the 17 magazine. I love 17 magazine. It was my teenage favorite magazine. I love two magazines overseas, Dolly from Australia, and 17 from
17.
The US.
Okay.
So I was like,
I haven't read either.
Are you sure? I thought.
Well, my sister had Dolly actually.
Yes. Yeah. So I was like extremely excited, and I told the models that I'm going to do this photo shoot, and they just look at me like, yeah, good for you. I'm supposed to wake up at 5 o'clock. 7 o'clock. I'm supposed to be in the studio. I woke up 9 o'clock with the phone ring and say, Tracy, where are you? And I look at my alarm. Someone turned it off. And I didn't realize how competition was clear, even to the people that I trust, who I live in the same room with.
Wow.
And that was the moment I started to be very careful. Believe me, I have 5 alarms. I put below my bed, on the side, in the front, and one below my feet as well, and one is from my cell phone. Just in case. I don't want that to happen again. Yeah.
Yeah, so beautiful on the outside, but maybe not so beautiful on the inside.
You'll be surprised. Do not judge books by the cover, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Not all, but some.
You commented on how that when you became a Christian, it changed your perspective as a model, that you are now answering to an audience of one, and that kind of really was really liberating. Is that something you felt able to share with other models and friends in those first couple of years? Is that something you're able to open up about with, or was that like a big secret?
Well, I was in Paris, and I went back to Jakarta, and then I went back to New York City as a Christian.
Okay.
So I remember being extremely excited I cannot explain back then what's happening to me, but there's change. Something happened in my heart, something happened in my mind. I see the world with such a beautiful color, you know, with different lens. I'm extremely excited about working, about friendship, about life, like never before. And one of my friends actually said to me, like, you look different. I mean, still insecure. I was like, wait, is it my hair? What's wrong with me? No. You look happier. You're nicer now, Tracy. You're nicer. I'm like, oh, well, I didn't realize the change. But there's something happened that when I went to New York City, I go to this church. So on Sunday, when I come back from the church, my friend just got back from a nightclub. And then they asked me, like, wait, you look nice. Where were you? We didn't see you at the club. And I said, wait, I was partying in the house of God. And then, and then they're like, wait, what's happening there? And then I have notes because I want to learn. Just God gave me the desire to learn more. Like I was hungry for everything I can learn from the scripture and from the pastor. So I just recite what I've just write. And I'm like, oh, so Jesus said this. And you know what happened with human? But Jesus said this. And I was just reciting. And one of the girls says that, "Oh, that's really good. I'll come with you next week." I thought she was joking. But next Saturday, she didn't go out. Next Sunday, the two of us went to church. When we come back home, the rest of the model asked, "Now you two going to, did you go to church?" I'm like, "Yeah." And then we both excited to hear the sermon. And then he was like, "Oh, Tracy, do you remember when the pastor says this? Oh, it was really funny. Okay, remember when the Bible says, yeah. And it was great. It was profound." So the two of us just ping pong and reciting, you know, reading our notes. And the girls are like, "That's really good." Weeks later, the five of us in church.
Wow.
I didn't know that, you know, just sharing what you've learned, just sharing this amazing news that you heard, it really is like, I mean, they see it's something that's interesting, much more interesting than nightclub.
Yeah, wow. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I think it's, you know, as a Christian, some of the Christians are very nervous just about being open about what they're thinking and learning and think that people won't want to hear it. But it's a real restriction. How did your family, there's a couple of questions here asking, how did your family respond to you becoming a Christian, especially given that history with Hinduism, Islam, and Christianity and a couple of, how did your family respond?
Majority of my family from my mom's side are Muslim. So I have so many of my mom's sisters wearing head cover. And they seem to be very religious. When I say that I become a Christian, well, at first they say, "Oh, it's good for you. And my parents think it's also like, "Oh, it's good, as long as you're not going to become weird, it's good." And then when they see the lifestyle that really transform, my dad says that, you know, my dad one time is making fun of me for being like a bit strict with lots of things. And at the end, he apologized. He said, like, "I'm so glad that you're actually very strict in many areas." Strict means like I have boundaries that I don't want to pass. And he said, "That's actually really good. It's protecting you from the bad things in the world." But then the moment when I say that I want to study theology at Oxford, when I got the scholarship, that's the moment where they're like, wait, no, this is too far.
Okay.
And then, because I was 26 at the time, I was in the top of my career, and my parents said, like, "You make so much money, you travel all the time, why you want to give up those two, what people are looking for, what people wish to have, to study theology? What are you going to become? You're going to be a very poor person once you're done with this school. You want to become a missionary?" I'm like, "Yeah, I want to become a missionary." I was joking to my dad. "You're going to be very poor. How are you going to get support?" And my parents just so worried about my future in the sense from health of wealth perspective and fame as well. They don't get it that someone will give up fame and wealth to pursue education and to pursue theology.
And that was, you know, more than a decade. I won't give away your age, but that was a while ago.
I'm not that old.
Have your parents' view softened a little bit now that they've seen you surviving and even thriving, not in the modeling industry? Have they kind of warmed up to your choices a bit more now?
You can say
you don't want to answer this.
No problem. If it's private, I'm honoring my parents. I love them so much. But this is my whole family. I forgot to mention that my whole family moved to Brazil in 2002. They live in Rio de Janeiro, and then I remember when my parents visiting me in Bali in 2011, I got the opportunity to preach in English at this English speaking church in Bali, and this is the first time and the last time my parents were sitting there listening to me preaching. And I remember walking down from the preaching. I was preaching about the good shepherd, about good God, and those who knows him will listen to him. And then I sat down, and my dad just hugged me and says this: There was a miracle. I was like, I checked my notes, like, miracle? I don't preach anything about the miracle of Christ. And I was like, "But dad, I don't preach anything in the miracle of Jesus. What do you mean by miracle?" "It's a miracle that you can speak in front of many people, in English." And I think for my dad, he thinks that my life is just full of miracles. And he didn't know yet who's the source of every miracle that happened in my life. Who's the one who make me become like this? It is God. But he just see the product of it. But he didn't see the creator of this product. And my dad just really appreciate the part that the change in me. And he keep liking my Instagram and my Facebook on every speaking engagement and keep saying, "Well done, proud of you," and so on. But I hope he'll meet the creator, because I know that his life will be changed as well. No one who met Christ or Jesus who's not been changed.
Yeah.
No one. They will change to the very best version of themselves slowly but surely.
Mm-hmm. Now, moving on to beauty. There's a couple of questions coming in here about beauty. Here's one from my audience. Thank you. As someone who has experienced both rejection and acclaim, what can you say to people who feel unattractive or self-conscious?
Sorry, can we have the last question?
So, as someone who's experienced both rejection but also, you know, acclaim, fame, acceptance, the question is, what do you think we should say to people, or what can we say to people who feel unattractive or self-conscious? What's your answer to, so people who feel unattractive? Yeah, they feel self-conscious. What kind of, you know, you've, I guess, felt that in that rejection.
Before, when I used to work as a model, I try to do my self-motivational, you know, I look at the mirror, it's like, you're pretty, you're smart, you're worthy, let's go, Tracy, get the job, you're going to be amazing. And I walk out,
Nike
stay
for
there,
models.
You know, yeah, it's like, I'm like, stay confident, stay happy, stay this. And I try my best to, you know, do my, you know, to motivate myself. It's not permanent. Even half day, it can just be gone. I try so much to do makeover, to make my ass look bigger, to make myself look prettier, to make my hair look thicker. It's not permanent. And I realized that so many times in the world, people try to change to feel like, to be like much more attractive, to be able to enjoy their life, to enjoy everything that they have. But oftentimes the world proposes something that is can be changed for temporarily, but not permanent. Then I realized the problem is not on the outlook. The problem is actually in the heart. Because I remember as a teenager, people say, oh, Tracy, you're so pretty. I'm like, not true. I'm ugly. I believe for the longest time I'm so ugly. The reason why I become a model because I'm unique and ugly. And when people say I'm pretty, I just think they're just being nice. They're telling lies, but they just want to make me happy. But that's not true. Until God cleansed my heart and said, you're worthy. I died for you on the cross to restore you. Your identity is not in your beauty, but it's in me. Therefore, you have to appreciate every gift that I give into you. And that restoration begins in the heart, but somehow it becomes overflowing. I start to appreciate everything that God given me. And now, it's funny enough, the moment I don't fight to feel secure, I just really enjoy His gift and appreciating it. I finally have the confidence, but not an arrogant way, but confident because of Him. And I want to appreciate His gift that is in me.
It's one of those ironies of Christianity, isn't it, that I think the Christian understanding of what our hearts are like is that they're actually ugly, but God loves us so much that He makes them beautiful in Him, but then that flows back out into life, which is a kind of a reversal. Yeah.
It's amazing. It's like the makeover starts from the heart, that only God can do that makeover. It's shine out. That's why I see people radiant and glowing as a non-believer, seeing people who really live for God. They're radiant. There's something different about their face, the way they behave, the way they talk. It's just so contrast to what I see in the world.
Let me ask another question touching on beauty. Sometimes Christianity is perceived as anti-beauty, you know, in movies or things like that. You know, it's people with dour expressions and dour clothes and dour attitudes. You can almost predict, I don't know if you guys said, you can almost predict it in the movie when the Christian comes on, the priest comes on, that they're going to be like negative or cynical or stupid. Those are your two major options. If someone here said that their perception of Christianity is that it's against fashion or it's against art or it's against beauty, if you're chatting to someone here, what would you say to try and persuade them otherwise?
I mean,
apart from the fact that you and I are so beautiful.
And they're all so beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, they're all so beautiful.
We're all beautiful in this room, yeah. Wow, how humble. you know, I think one of my biggest fear of becoming Christian, to be honest, I'm so scared I'll become a boring person. But my option was just too boring but happy, or fine, but empty. So I was like, oh, fine, I'm just going to be boring and happy. But actually, life has never been boring as a Christian. And in fact, you know, when I learn about, see, I probably have to, you know, I see the magazine, I see the, especially movies, actually, you know, the Christian always looked like the knowing one, the boring one. And I was like, I think we need to differentiate between Christianity and Christian. Because Christians, you know, they choose their lifestyle, they choose the way they behave, you know. And we God doesn't just transform people right away, they become perfect. We all in this journey. You know, but we are saved not by our action, but by God's grace, that our actions reflections of that promise, you know, of that transformations that God's given us. So I would say, like, if some Christians choose to say no to certain things because of their limited understanding of beauty, aesthetic, creations, then it's up to them. And that, I mean, like, you know, but I've met so many people, so many Christians, you know, they reflect, you know, I mean, God, the creator of the universe, is the one who created everything so uniquely, aesthetic, and beautiful. It's just perfect at first, until it's tainted by sin, and the brokenness is reflecting in the creations. When God says, when God says, like, human made in His image, we all resembling that gift of creating. And I realized when I was doing fashion show in Paris, I look at this dress called Haute Couture, Alta Moda. It's handmade. It's like cost like $30,000, $50,000. It takes 6 months to make. It's beautiful. It's handmade. And I realized, like, if you can create such a beautiful creations, you're the designer of that small scale. It's because we're reflecting the big designer. So art, fashion, media is tainted by the sin of the world, but it's supposed to be beautiful, reflecting the creator. One more thing, living in Bali, living 5 minutes away from the beach, and my clock is the sky. Because when the sunset means I have to go home. When the sunset up means I can still swim in the middle of the sea. I remember seeing the sunset never the same. Every single day there's always beautiful colors. Sometimes purplish, reddish, oranges, yellowish, sometimes covered in clouds, but always beautiful, never the same. And that is God. God is full of aesthetic, beautiful artists, the great designer. And I think whatever we do it for God's glory, and we have that art in us. That's why we love beautiful clothing, we love doing hair, we love painting, we love doing art, we love gardenings, we love lots of things that reflect things, the creator, because we love to create in a small scale. Because we're made in God's image. For me, being Christians, Christianity liberate me to reflect God's glory in everything God's given, including in what I wear. It's kabaya, borders. It's reflecting the colors of God's creations.
So almost the opposite of the idea of a withdrawal, but actually can lead to more engagement and more confidence and a better understanding of both. I guess both that strength and weakness, because you talked about both its beauty and its wonder, but also that it can be tainted.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so it's got a kind of complexity there. Yeah. Okay, that's really helpful. We've touched on that. Some questions here. There's a question here about your, talked a little bit about your modeling friends and then also your family. What about some of your Hindu and Muslim friends? How have they responded to your Christian belief?
I'm so glad you asked, because yesterday I have my best friend, devoted Hindu person, and you know, him and his wife just messaged me yesterday and said, "Tracy, I'm so glad whatever you do in Australia, I follow you, what's going on, and I'm extremely proud of you." And I don't know what they see. I think when I explained to him and her, the wife, both of them are very close friends of mine. You know, I explained about this beauty of knowing the one who make us and allowing, you know, in that relationship, allowing him to change us. And that relationship is not about me trying so hard to reach up, but he himself, God himself, is reaching down and wanted to have relationship with me. I can see in their eyes just like, that sounds very foreign, because in the way they devoted their faith, they have to do lots of offering to please God's, in hoping that God will bless their life. And for me, when I already see the contrast, oftentimes it's hard for them to believe because of cultural aspect, because they get used to it, because it takes great faith to say yes to Jesus and to believe. And it's just interesting that they love what I do. They see the impact, because oftentimes people will make a comment like, thank you for coming. You know, I cried, I did, I did. People just kind enough to just share the experience on Instagram. And it's a public domain. People can see it. And my friend read it. And my friend said, like, I'm so glad that's what you do. Mm. I'm so glad you're helping lots of young people. I'm glad you do counseling. I'm glad you shared the good news that you believe in. Good for you. But it's not there until, it's not personal for them. It's just, yeah, they're happy, but it's
so
good for you.
So they're quite warm about it and quite glad that you're doing it. But that disconnect, I guess there's a gap there between, it's just between the that structure, which is about what you have to do, and you're saying, no, it's all done. It's already all been done.
Yeah.
But they can't quite hear that. But it's great that they're willing to engage with you. Would you say, in your experience, is Indonesia a place where it's easy to just talk about what you believe? People often say that it's quite difficult in Australia. Like, even people who come from America come and visit Australia and say, ah, it's like a closed country.
Yeah.
What's your experience?
I think one thing about Indonesia that probably fascinated many people is that Indonesia, everybody have to have religion, and you cannot say you don't believe in God. You have to believe in God. It's a must. It's the law. It's a must. Even in our
it's a law.
It's a law.
Okay.
If you say you have no faith, you don't believe in any God, you'll be in trouble in Indonesia.
Okay.
But then people respect belief system. People respect, in the sense that in Lebaran, Idul Fitri, El Mubarak, people, the Christian, the Hindus will say, "Hey, congratulations on your celebration after 30 days of fasting," and then in Christmas, the Muslim will say, "Hey, Merry Christmas, wishing you, may Jesus bless you even more." And even the word "God bless you," which used to be saying by lots of Christians, now become a common word in Indonesia, that we say "God bless you" at the end of our conversation too, even if you come from different faith. So there's a sense of respect towards other belief system, but there is something that we know that, okay, it's good for you, but it's not for me, and you cannot push me because this is my tradition. This is my parents' faith. This is what I believe as well. Even though sometimes I doubt it, but I cannot publicly explain that to people. But this is my faith. So there's a sense of this, like respecting, but the conversation is still open.
Hmm.
Not in the way that pushing people to believe what you believe, but explaining why you believe in what you believe, and asking them questions as well. So I found there's a freedom in Indonesia. In certain city, not all, there's lots of city in Indonesia is having Sharia law, Islam law. So that is, you cannot even dress Christian, you know, like dress normal. I mean, you have to wear head cover, even if you're Christian or Hindus or Buddhist. But in general, I think the room for people to explore religions are still free. People can easily enter mosque or church or Hindu temple, even though you're not a believer of that faith. So there's a freedom in exploring, and there's a freedom in changing your worldview. But the cost sometimes comes just from your internal family when they will reject you because they feel like you disrespecting the ancestors' faith that they've been holding on for years. Yeah.
Yeah, because ancestor worship is still a.
It's rooted. It's the identity attached in that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Is walking out from that means you're walking out from your identity.
Okay, and rejecting your family.
Rejecting your family, yes.
Yeah, which is very difficult.